Thanks for downloading the show. Welcome to Garden Fork Radio. My name is Eric. Is this your first time here? It's me talking with my friends, eclectic DIY and cooking and gardening and fun stuff. Today, it's the lunch hour show. My friend Aaron from the Impatient Gardener is here. Hey, Aaron.
Hey, Eric. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for running home to do this podcast.
No problem. Well, we've been trying to get this organized for several months now. And I think I've gotten almost as bad as you've gotten about, you know, getting things on the schedule and whatever. Yeah. So I think we realized we better just quick do it before we find some reason why we have to run some other direction.
Boom, done.
Yep.
So we've been talk back channel discussions here about compost and gardening. And you were like, well, I have some things to say about this. And I'm like, okay. And here we are.
Here we are indeed. No, the first thing, and I actually brought this up to you, whatever, 2 months ago or whatever, you did a great video on composting and how you do composting and not to really sweat it. And yeah. I love that video because it totally goes along with my philosophy of composting. I think somewhere along the line, people got this idea that composting was complicated. And it's
yes.
the least complicated thing in the world. Nature does all the work. And so I get frustrated when I see people like not start composting or start a little bit of a pile or do something because they feel like they have to buy stuff and do all kinds of things. So I just really loved that video because I think that's so important to just let people know you don't have to really sweat it.
No, the problem is people think it's got to be this complicated measurement thing. It doesn't help that there are companies out there that sell compost ingredients, basically, you know. I mean, not to know, I actually did do a sponsored video with a company that I actually like that has a nitrogen booster for compost. And I think that's legit because most compost, backyard compost has too much brown material, not enough nitrogen in it. So, but they make you think like there's some magic juju. And really, if you start out with just brown and green and stick it together with some worms, you will get compost. But people just kind of hype it like it's going to cook up to 160 degrees in 2 weeks, and then you're going to have this brown gold, as they call it, you know?
Right, right. Yeah, and that's just it. I mean, yes, you can do things, absolutely, to make your compost faster and make the process go quicker. But the process is going to happen regardless of what you do. So you might as well just get started and worry about the fine tuning later if you even feel like worrying about the fine tuning, because you don't have to.
Yeah, I don't.
Yeah. But you know, I mean, you think about how much, what blows my mind is when you, and of course, I don't have an article handy here, but let's just talk generally here. The amount of food waste, and I'm talking about like food scraps from people's kitchen that goes into landfills, is so ridiculous. There is no reason for anything that's, you know, meat you shouldn't put in your compost. But beyond that, there is no reason why you should ever put, you know, a vegetable peel in a, you know, down your garbage disposal or into your garbage can.
Yeah, we have actually in Brooklyn during the week where we live, we actually have curbside pickup composting program going on.
That is fabulous. I know that there's a company near us that does it, but they charge you for it. And then they charge you to buy the compost that they make, but you get a discount on it, which I think is a great business model.
The problem, you know, when you live out in the country is just that, I mean, the carbon footprint of moving that raw compost to a compost facility.
Right. Exactly.
That was a big
sentence.
Well,
you know, it is. Sometimes I will see on like gardening chat groups and things like that, I will see people say, hey, I'm going to start composting. Should I buy this, this, and this? And my first thought is always, wait, stop. No, composting shouldn't be about buying anything. I mean, if you want to buy like a composter, one of those turny ones, some people like those because they're really worried about like rodents and rats and stuff, which I will tell you, we've got plenty of wildlife out here. I've never had a problem with that whatsoever. But they want one of those tumbler things, which is fine if you really feel like you want one of those, but you certainly don't need it. You need a pile. You don't need anything more than a pile on the ground. But, you know, people get all upset about it and worried about it. And my gosh, then they put it, and you know how that goes. Once you start thinking about, I need to do this, this, and this to get this started, then you never start it.
Yeah, the overthinking. The simplest way to compost is just with some chicken wire, just wrap it into a circle and stand it up with some wooden stakes into the ground and start throwing stuff in it.
Absolutely. The one thing I will say, I do buy one thing for my compost, which addresses the nitrogen issue, which is that about once every 3 years, I go to the feed store and I buy a big bag of alfalfa cubes that people feed horses and stuff.
Yes, I know.
Because alfalfa is super high in nitrogen. So when your compost needs that boost because you've got too many browns, what I do is I take a 5-gallon bucket and I throw in a bunch of those alfalfa cubes and I just soak them till they're all, you know, broken up because they're quite dried up and compressed.
Yep.
And then I just sort of make a few holes in my compost and I kind of throw some of that watery, stinky alfalfa goop in there. And that does get the compost cooking fast. It's amazing what that does to the compost. But that's like, I don't know how much one of those bags costs, maybe $12 or something. Every 3 years, I figure that's worth spending.
Yeah, or go to your neighbors and get some horse manure or cow manure.
Yeah, absolutely. I will say there is a whole thing going on right now. They're having a big problem with it in the UK, is that they're having a lot of issues, in particular with horse manure, apparently, with systemic herbicides that are ending up in manure. They not get processed. And so what happens is if those stay for years. So it's certain ones of them stay for years in manure. So even if you let it sit and, you know, you've got, it's not hot anymore, it's completely broken down, that herbicide can still be in there. So I think it's probably, I haven't heard as much of this happening in the U.S., but what's interesting is that the signs of it are apparently, it's not necessarily the first thing you'd think of. Plants get a little bit deformed. They seem a little yellow. Things seem just not quite right with them, but you think maybe there's something else going on. So it's not the first thing you might think of. So I will say, if you're going to do that, know your sources. And there is a test that some people say you can do, which is you let that, but before you do anything with that manure, put it in your compost or anywhere else, you let it kind of rot down. And then you do like a simple seed test, which is like you throw like a few bean seeds in it or something,
yeah,
and see if they sprout and see what they look like when they sprout. And generally speaking, you know, if there's a problem, if there's an herbicide in there, they either A, won't sprout, or if they do sprout, they'll be all mangled and gnarly looking. So you know something's going a little wrong there.
Wow.
So
my neighbor is a essentially a grass farmer. He works on my tractor also. And he hays a lot of fields he owns and fields that he rents. And I would love to have him on the podcast, but he is averse to the internet, unfortunately. He is incredibly smart and just a brilliant person and knows all about essentially growing grass. But he's a little internet averse, so.
Yeah, that's too bad. Well, maybe someday you can talk him into it.
We'll see. He's just a good guy. Anyway.
Maybe he could come on under an assumed name. A pen name, so to speak.
Mr. Farmer.
Right, exactly. So I have, speaking of sort of gardening type things, I have something that I'm hoping maybe you or maybe somebody listening could help me out with, which is I have an interesting water situation happening over in my vegetable garden, and I'm not quite sure how to go about pinpointing where this water is coming from. So I have these, you guys, now we've talked about my vegetable garden on the podcast before, so some people who are listening have probably heard about it, and maybe you've seen some pictures of it on the blog.
The giant raised bed.
The giant raised bed garden, right. So it's all raised beds, but I do have, right by the gate, I planted some climbing roses on either side of the gate in the ground, and I, you know, pushed the gravel aside and made a little border there, and you know, have a nice little spot there where I planted those. Well, I looked at one the other day and I went, oh, that's not looking good at all. It was really looking bad. And so I sort of pulled the mulch away that I had there, and it was there's standing water in this bit of ground right there. And I thought, well, this is really weird because I haven't watered here in a long time. And what's even more strange and puzzling is that, so we do have drip system in the vegetable garden there. And so my first thought was, oh, I've got a leak in the drip system somewhere. Even though there's no drip going to that, I never got around to actually hooking any drip up to that. I thought, oh, there's a leak somewhere. Except that we had been gone for the previous almost 10 days. And this is great. I set up a drip system and then I went on vacation and I accidentally turned off the drip system.
Oops.
Right. Oops. So the vegetables were not super happy about that situation. But I know that the drip system had been turned off at the hose well before. It wasn't just like turned off at a bed or something. It was way back in the system. So I knew it couldn't be that the drip system was leaking because that was completely shut off. So it hadn't rained a ton. I mean, there had been some rain, kind of normal rain. So anyway, so I have this standing water in this spot, and it is a little boggy in some places around it, but not nearly as bad as it is right in that particular spot. So do you have any suggestions of how I go about sort of troubleshooting where that water's coming from? Because I assume that the first part of solving this problem would be figuring out where it's coming from, right?
Yeah. The first thing I thought of with the soil under there is clay-like, and it just holds soil more. I mean, holds water more.
It is interesting. It's such a mishmash of soil over there because sort of our natural soil around here is sand, basically, because I think essentially we live close enough to Lake Michigan that our yard was a beach at one point.
Yeah,
perhaps.
It used to be Lake Michigan in your yard.
Right. So we have a lot of sand, but there's a lot of places where fill was brought in over the years. So there's these little pockets of kind of all sorts of different things going on. So it is a little clayier over there. So there definitely is a soil texture thing, but it's not like it's solid clay. I also thought perhaps, and I guess I would have to dig down to really figure this out, there were at one point in this area a lot of trees, which we had cut down over the years. Maybe there's like a giant tree root underneath there that is just creating almost like a sink and not letting anything drain. You think that could be possible?
Ooh, I don't know. I would think they would absorb all the water and not let it puddle.
Well, it's where we would have cut down a tree. So it's like a non, oh. I don't know, you know, like an old tree root from something we had previously cut down. I don't know. So anyways, I'm looking for some ideas. I think at this point, if I can't get it sorted, what I'm probably going to have to do is just stick pots in those two places and grow whatever I'm going to grow by the gate in a pot instead of in the ground, because the drainage situation there is really bad. The only other thing that is a potential factor, and I hesitate to even bring it up because I don't want it to be this, but this vegetable garden is sort of adjacent to our septic mound. So we've got a mound system, which shouldn't have anything to do with anything. And we've never had, you know, we have to get that the whole program tested every 2 years. We've never had any issues pop up or anything like that. But I just always kind of keep that in the back of my head because it is a close proximity there.
Wow. So, I didn't think of that, but yeah. So, if it's clogged, if the mound system is clogged, it's possible it could overflow into your yard.
Right. Let's not think about that, but I think it is possible. So I wonder how you would, I'm sure you could have a septic person out to test that maybe.
Yeah. But, I actually helped a friend of mine dig a new hole for an outhouse last weekend, and we went down 3 feet and hit clay. And I was really surprised at that. And it was a really dry clay that was almost like a layer of cement. I was really surprised at that. And then, I mean, just why don't you just put a shovel in the ground and see what you find out.
Keep digging until I find something. I guess that's probably the right solution. Right thing to do. Anyways, it's a bit of a mystery that's been going on, and a bit of a disappointment because I had sort of had these visions of these beautiful climbing roses this year going over the arbor by the gate, but that's not happening.
Well, the rest of the yard looks pretty darn good. I mean, the Instagram feed from the Impatient Gardener, it just makes me like, oh, I don't know the names of those plants.
Well, thanks. Yeah, we've been pretty fortunate because we've had pretty steady rain this year, so it's been relatively easy to manage until the past couple of weeks it's gotten a little dry. I'm trying. Normally by this time of year, I'm a little burned out and it's hard to make myself go out there and stay on top of the maintenance. But I'm having some folks for a tour in a couple of weeks, so I'm trying to hold it together for a couple of weeks until I get, people through here, and so it's not a complete wreck when people see it.
Is that where the local garden group has tours? People go to different houses?
It's actually a little bit more informal than that. It's our master gardener group, and we have this year we started a thing where it's just really casual garden drop-ins, basically. So it's the idea is that we had a hard time getting people to be on formal garden tours because that's a lot of work to get your garden ready for that.
Yep.
So we said, hey, just give us a week's notice when you want to open up your garden to people, when it's looking good. And don't worry about it being perfect. No one expects it to be perfect. We all have weeds in our gardens. So I'm going to do that in a couple of weeks here. So,
With some cold beverages, I'm sure.
we always tell people when they open up their gardens that they are not required to provide anything but a wonderful place for people to walk through. But you can be sure I will have some cold beverages. You can be sure I would never allow people to come here and not offer them a nice icy beverage. That is most definitely going to have alcohol in it. They better, if they don't want an alcoholic drink, they might have to bring their own. I hate to say
Did you see the post I put on Instagram and Facebook this morning about my potatoes having yellow leaves?
I did see that, and I actually had a thought of what it might be, and then I did a little bit of looking around, actually to see if I was. What I was thinking was right. So, and I put a reply up on the discussion group, but so here's my thinking on what that is. So first of all, the holes in the leaves, definitely bugs. But there's like 80 billion bugs that go after potatoes.
Yes.
But because you've got the yellow leaves with the brown tips and the plant next to it seems to be, you said the plant next to it was just fine,
Yeah,
right?
it's flowering. It's got green leaves.
I think there's a watering issue with that particular plant, and it's probably underwatering. And I think that the bug damage and the holes in the leaves is actually a symptom of the other problem of the water damage or water you
Lack of
underwatering situation, lack of water situation. Because bugs always my theory anyways, and there might be some proof in science behind this too. Bugs generally, attack weaker plants first. So, I think it's a watering issue specific to that plant. Like for some reason that plant isn't getting as much water as the one next to it.
Interesting.
Do you think that might be, is there any reason to think that might actually be right?
It's possible because actually the pump that I water the garden with water from the spring in our backyard. I don't use the well. And the pump went out the other day. And of course, I'm like, I haven't put the new pump in because I want to make a video about it. So, and my challenge is to make it interesting to more than just the three guys that want to know how to replace a shallow well jet pump, you know? But
Right.
yeah, maybe I should just go over there with the watering can.
Well, I think it'd be worth giving it a try to give that one because there's a lot of things with potatoes that can lead to those yellowing leaves, but the brown tips on the edges seems to point to a watering thing more than anything else.
All right. Good to know.
See, I'll be interested to know if you think I'm right once you
Well,
explore into
I'm
that a
just going
little.
to water it this afternoon and we'll find out.
There we go. See if it gets better. My
Yeah.
potatoes are looking really good. They are flowering like crazy, and they have gotten the only problem with them is that they have gotten huge and they're flopping all over everything next to them. And I've hilled them up as much as I possibly can. So now they're just going to have to. It's a little unkempt over in the vegetable garden these days, which is, I guess, to be expected this time of year.
You know, if you actually visit a farm, short of like a soybean farm or, a farm with large tractors, but if you go to like a farm to table kind of farm, farmer's market kind of farm, it's you're fighting nature. It's chaos, and then there's some rows of lettuce, you
Yeah,
know?
right. Yes, that's exactly true. Speaking of fighting nature and things in vegetable gardens, I don't know if you followed on Instagram the visitors that I had in my garden, which moved in while I was out of town. Did you see that at all?
No, I missed that. Instagram is, shame on Instagram for not showing me.
Yeah, I had bunnies move into my onions while I was out of town.
And oh, I did see that. Okay.
So this is funny because, first of all, I will say, you know, I've got a big fence around this garden. I did know that the fence was not going to, there were some areas of the fence that had a lot of room underneath the fence. And mm-hmm. so I looked at those and I thought, ooh, well, a rabbit's going to be able to go right underneath there. But I didn't really think any rabbit would bother hopping into a garden and then hopping up 2 feet into a raised bed. Yeah. Apparently, I have completely underestimated rabbits. So I noticed before I left that there was somebody trying to sort of build a nest in where I was growing my onions, which I multi-sowed, which is kind of a little trick I picked up from Charles Dowding. He's kind of the one of the guys who's at the forefront of the whole no-dig movement. He's a English gardener. Mm-hmm. He's got a great YouTube channel. And he multi-sows onions. So what he does is he plants like 5 onion seedlings together. And the idea is that you get smaller onions, which are fine for most people for a home gardener.
Yep.
But you get many more of them. So your overall harvest is more in terms of pounds. So anyways, I really multi-sowed the onions. So the onions are a big mess. And I had noticed before I left there was a bit of a nest starting. And I scraped that all out of there, moved it out of there. Sorry, bunny, you're not building your nest here. And then when I came home from vacation, I looked in there and there was like what I thought was 5. It turned out to be, I think, 9, 8 or 9 little bunny faces looking at me. So they had fully moved in at that point. So then I sort of decided that I would make a deal with the rabbits that if I allowed them to live their infancy in my onions, that they would agree to never come back to my garden. So that's how we ended the relationship. So, but I was all worried because I thought I would have to like move these little guys out of my garden at some point. Cause I thought, how are they going to get out of this raised bed, which is like 2 feet tall. Yeah. So I went in there one day to just water the garlic that was on the other end of the, of that same bed. And they freaked out and they jumped, like 3 of them jumped out of the bed with no problem whatsoever and then ran away. I'm like, oh, well, I guess I didn't have to worry about like moving them somewhere.
Wow.
So anyways, the rabbits are gone, but it was, I actually kind of developed a little affinity for them. They were pretty cute.
Yeah. Well, they'll be fox food. So.
Well, that's just it. I mean, there was a lot of people on Instagram who got really excited. They were following them. They'd email me and message me for updates on what's going on with the bunnies. And then they ran away. And I didn't really want to break the news to people that we have a very healthy fox population in our neighborhood.
Yeah.
Which is why we don't have a lot of rabbits. So I choose not to think about what happened to them after they left my yard.
Yeah. Well, nature is nature and it's pretty brutal.
It is. And frankly, thank gosh for that because, you know, I mean, if the 1 year that we didn't have see a lot of foxes around here, we had a major rabbit problem. And rabbits, I think, are almost more difficult to deal with than deer. They're really a pain in a garden. So.
Yeah. Yeah, because they're smaller. They're easier to get into stuff.
Right. And they seem to eat like they really just go after everything. I mean, deer seem to, I find it very difficult to find a repellent, like a spray on repellent that rabbits will actually pay attention to. I've found a few for deer that work really well. For rabbits, they don't seem to care much about that. They're just like these dumb little fuzzy cute things. It's the fuzzy cute thing that gets me in trouble.
On that note, I imagine people have got to their destination now.
I'm sure. And they really are done listening to rabbit stories. So.
Welcome to Rabbit Talk on Garden Fork. Hey, real quick, no new reviews on iTunes.
Oh, no.
Jennifer, Ohio is the last one. So.
Everybody, go get it. Write a review on iTunes.
You can do it on the podcast app now. So.
Oh, even easier.
And a little plug for Patreon. If you want to support the podcast on Patreon, I am recording 3 to 4 behind-the-scenes patron-only podcasts a month. And then you can listen. You get that emailed to you, or you can listen to it on the Patreon app, which really is kind of the better way. I record it during the week when I'm, it's just kind of Eric behind the scenes. So if you're interested in that, there's a link in the show notes for supporting Garden Fork.
Great. All right. Well, listen, have a great weekend. I hope you're doing something. Are you fixing the pump this weekend? Are we going to see a video on that soon?
Yeah. Well, what I'm intrigued about is how to calculate rise over run, because the pump is rated for 25 feet of lift and the spring is down the hill. So it's not only, it's down. I can't measure without a short of a laser and a long, really long stick. I can't measure how high I have to pump the water without doing some kind of surveyor thing. So my buddy who's a surveyor taught me this really simple way using a string, a tape measure, and a line level, how to measure rise over run to calculate the rise between the spring and where I'm going to put the pump.
Oh, that'll be cool to see. Good. See, this will definitely be interesting to more than just the three guys doing the pump rehab thing.
All right. That will post this weekend, which will be just after this podcast goes up. So theimpatientgardener.com, right?
That's right.
All right. Thanks, everyone. Make it a great day. Radio@gardenfork.tv is our email address, and we'll see you next week.
Garden Fork's theme music is used under license from uniquetracks.com.